Hello and welcome to my podcast. My name is Shaden, and this is a recording of our Bible study at Hope Collective Church that meets every Wednesday at 6:30 in the evening. If you are in between ages 18 to 40 years old, you are welcome to join. But for now, please enjoy this week's episode.
Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. This first beatitude is monumental for the rest of the Beatitudes. Not only that, if you're not poor in spirit, all of Jesus' parables will not make sense. All his teachings will not make sense. Because most of his teachings are actually about the kingdom of heaven. Most of his parables are about the kingdom of heaven. When you look at this, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. What comes to your mind? You can think that and go, okay, only the poor people are blessed. But we know people who are financially impoverished, and it doesn't seem like they're blessed. So it's not speaking about financially poor. Although those who are financially poor can already have a step ahead of understanding of what poor in spirit actually means. Because those who are financially poor are already a bit desperate, a bit needy. Because a lot of us in here, we grew up in America, we're taught you have to grow up and provide for yourself, and if you don't, you're a derelict. If you're on governmental support, shame on you. If you need help from other people, shame on you. You didn't make it. I'll tell you right now, I am on EBT. I'm on food stamps. And yes, I have shame when I'm at the store at Safeway and I have to pull out my Kukua card because that shows that I don't make enough money, right? But you know what? I'm not shame when I'm eating that free poke bowl, right? Let me preach. I have no shame eating that free poke bowl. No way. I want to talk about two people that I know. Okay, the first one is this lady here. I really don't know her name, but because I would call it abuela. That means grandma. I was in Mexico for 4 years. And this right here is one of the most dangerous strips in Tijuana. And I call this alleyway Heroin Valley because there would be needles on the floor. We would go late at night around 10 o'clock because that's where all the drug addicts were out and all the kids were out that were selling drugs, and we would feed them arroz con leche, which is like a meal. But every time I would come to her house, come to this area two or three times a week, and she would always be so happy. She would always greet me with, God is so good. Isn't he so good? God is so good. And she would be full of joy. I'm looking around on the floor looking at heroin needles, looking at men and women that are just in rags and full of sores, kids that have glue on their face because they get high off of this glue substance. I'm going, what are you talking about? God is so good. How are you so happy? I didn't get it. I still don't get it. And when I go and visit her and she's not there, she's at the temple praying. She's always spending time with God, and being even with her, I was blessed. She lived a blessed life. She was happy. She had joy. She had peace. Even though everything around her was miserable and hell, she was a light there. She had joy. She had the fruit of the Spirit because she had the connection with the Lord. She knew how poor she was, both financially and spiritually. And because of that, she was one of the happiest women I've ever met. Next story in Malawi. This is a typical house there. There's this strange sense that I don't understand still. Because I would go and spend time with families there in dirt homes where they don't eat for a day or two. And they're sitting down in the dirt with one another, laughing and joking, talking about life. There's this tangible joy that you could really feel. Where I look around and I go, there's no reason for you guys to be happy. You guys are starving. There's no running water anywhere. There's no electricity. There's mosquitoes. It's over 100 degrees. It doesn't make any sense why these people are happy. But they knew they were financially poor and they were spiritually poor. When we have church, they're on their faces, crying with tears streaming down their face, begging God for it to rain. Because if it doesn't rain, their crops won't grow and they will starve for the next season. That's the kind of desperation these people had for God to provide. Literally crying out to God for rain. And because they lived in this type of poverty, financially and spiritually, somehow it doesn't make sense to me. Somehow they lived a happy and peaceful life with one another. It doesn't make sense. Unless you change and become like little children, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Here, Jesus is going, unless you become like them, children had no status in those days, therefore, they were worthless. They mean nothing, they own nothing, they have no assets, they're not important, they're uneducated. Unless you become like them, you're not going to understand the kingdom of heaven. You're not going to get it. Unless you are poor in spirit, you're not going to understand the kingdom of heaven. It's a chapter afterwards. Jesus says, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to enter the kingdom of heaven. This is not just talking about people who are financially rich. You can read that verse and you go, it's not talking about me because I'm not rich. I'm not like Mark Zuckerberg. But if you compare yourself to other people around the world, just the fact that you live in America, you're like the top richest people in the world. This is talking about your pride. You can have money, you can have insurance, you can have a house, you can have properties, you can have a car, you can have everything paid off, you can have medical, and you can feel like you don't need help. There is no reason for you to need God when you have everything. For us in America, we have a long ways to go to be poor in spirit. Many of us don't know what it's like to go days without food. Or other people in the world where they're still running from genocide and wars. We don't know what that suffering is like, where we're crying out to God to save our lives. We don't know what that's like. We cry out to God that we can have money to pay off our car this week. Right? Which is okay, which is good. I don't want to belittle that. But those people who live in impoverished nations have one step ahead in being poor in spirit because they know what it's like to live in severe desperation for God, for His provision. Psalms 51, 16 to 17 says, you do not delight in sacrifice or I would bring it. You do not take pleasure in burnt offerings. My sacrifice, O God, is a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart. You, God, will not despise. This right here, in those days, can be considered blasphemy. Because in those days, it was all about sacrifice. It was all about offerings. There were 612 laws that these people had to obey. And if they broke one of those, they had to do some type of sacrifice or offering. It's like every day there was blood flowing. And here, the author of this psalm, he knows what God actually wants. And I believe this was David, because David was called a man after God's own heart. And here, he's saying, you, O God, what you want, what pleases your heart, is a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart. Someone who knows that they don't have it together. Someone who's not pretending. Someone who's not going to church because that's their sacrifice or their offering to God. If I go to church, then I'm a Christian. If I read the Bible, I'm a Christian. If I pray before my meals, I'm a Christian. I do all these Christian things, therefore I'm a Christian. God likes when you do those things, but what gives Him pleasure is you going to Him going, God, I need you. I'm lost without you. I'm desperate for you. I will die without you. That's what pleases His heart. It's not religiosity, if that's a word, but a broken heart. Jesus says this, woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. Let's stop there for a second and understand who He's talking to. In those days, Pharisees were like pastors. Leaders in the church. Pharisees were people like me, teaching the Bible in front of you guys, with a Bible degree. Pharisees were people who are supposed to be the ones carrying scriptures and teaching scriptures and showing who God is. And here, Jesus is saying, woe to you, you pastors, you leaders in the church, all you who are educated in the Bible, woe to you, you hypocrites. You shut the door of the kingdom of heaven in people's faces. That is very scary. He's speaking to church leaders here. Not sinners that are drunk or having orgies. He's talking to church leaders here. People who know the Bible. Who go to church every Sunday. You yourselves do not enter, nor will you let those enter who are trying to. Are you kidding me? You will not enter the kingdom of heaven. Even though you know scriptures, you teach the scriptures. That's a big warning for us because we can know all the answers. But if we're not poor in spirit, if we're not humble, we do not stand a chance of understanding the kingdom of heaven. That's why I said in the beginning, poor in spirit is monumental, monumental to being a follower of Christ. If you miss that, you'll miss everything. Because you will have a chip on your shoulder and you will be prideful. I know the answers. I got it all together. We all know those Christians who are judgmental, hypocritical. We all know people who call themselves Christians and they are nothing like Jesus Christ. You know why? Because they're not poor in spirit. Their pride is getting in the way. They're rich in their own knowledge, in their own ways. They're not desperate for God. This one right here, Isaiah 64:6. All of us have become like one who is unclean, and all our righteous acts are like filthy rags. This is during a time where people were trying to do the right thing in order to look good. They're going through the motions. And here, it's saying, all your righteous acts are like filthy rags. Let me break down what that word filthy rags is. That word that is used in the original scripture is the same word that is used for women who use rags for their menstrual cycle. All of your righteous acts are like filthy tampons. That's so gnarly. Our greatest disqualification is our imaginary qualifications. Let me say that again. Our greatest disqualification in the kingdom of heaven is our imaginary qualifications. You think you're good because you go to church, because you don't sin, right? You don't get drunk like those other guys, or sleeping around like your other friends. You're good, right? You got it together. Because we're at Bible study right now. Be very careful. Because that righteous act is like a filthy tampon to God. This is not going to save you. What pleases God more than anything is your desperation for God. When I was in Mexico, there was a guy named Pastor Vaughn. And he said this to me that I will never forget. He's like, you know, us Christians, us leaders, we tend to evangelize and want to win people for Jesus to get them to heaven. And we think, when we get to heaven, I want to see all the people I brought to heaven because of all the good deeds I did getting them there, right? And he said, what if this? What if Jesus brings you to hell for 1 second and says, look at all the people that you led to hell because of your religion? Wow. We want to bring people to heaven, but how much of our religiosity is leading people away from Jesus? We need to be brokenhearted people. If you're going to be any good in the kingdom of heaven, you have to have a poor spirit. If you want to do any good in your life for the kingdom of heaven, you have to be desperate, crying out to God. So if you're in here and you don't feel like you're good enough, that you're too bad of a sinner, that you're below the social construct, that you don't make enough money, well, guess what? You're one step ahead because you already know what desperation looks like. Your heart is already broken. You might be one step ahead with depression because you're going, nothing in this world is pleasing to my eye. Nothing in this world is satisfying me. You're already one step ahead because that is the truth. Nothing in this world will satisfy. Your job won't save you. Your savings won't save you. That new brand new car you got won't save you. Won't bring you the joy that you want. The status that you want with the money you make or the job that you have or the posts you have on Instagram will not please your soul. It will for a moment, but when you go to bed at night, there's that feeling of, I'm still lacking something. And the problem is, we tend to look at that lack and we go, okay, I need another thing to fill that. When you're lost and you're broken and you're lonely, you're anxious, you're depressed, bring that loneliness to God. That's what it looks like to be poor in spirit. God, I need you because nothing is working for me. Everything that I'm doing is not giving me life. God, help me. I need you. Let's finish the verse here. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. A lot of us in here would want a brand new car. I'm not saying that's wrong. Okay? I have a pretty brand new car. We want a brand new car because that would give us comfort. That would give us safety. That would give us status. That would give us a lot of options to go play. There's all these emotions that come from a new car, right? The problem with that new car is it's going to get old. The kingdom of heaven is all those things. Safety, comfort, status. And it's something that will not get old and will not disappoint. To get a car, you have to work your butt off. Why waste 10 years of your life when you can have those emotions right now? The kingdom of heaven is all those good, let's just say good vibes. That sounds so new agey, but all those good vibes right now in this place. The bottom line though is two words, reign and rule. The kingdom of heaven is God's reign and rule in your life. Because his reign and his rule, there will be peace. There will be comfort. There will be safety. It may not be what you think, but again, this is not your reign and your rule. This is his reign and his rule. So the question we have to ask yourself is, do you really want to be poor in spirit? Do you really want the reign and rule of Christ in your life? Because if you do, then you have to put your pride aside. You have to cry out for him. He cannot rule your life if you are the ruler of your life. He doesn't share his throne. He is on the throne or he's not. You're either poor in spirit or you're not. Go back to the repent word, metanoia. You're either metanoia or you're paranoia. Remember those two words? Metanoia, the kingdom of heaven, his reign, his rule, or paranoia, a delusion, a big delusion that usually ends in disappointment. I'm going to end with this quote here. 14th century theologian Meister Eckhart says this, God is not found in the soul by adding anything, but by a process of subtraction. There's a scripture in the Bible that says, he must increase and I must decrease. When I think about that verse, I think I must decrease in order for him to increase, right? I must subtract my reins and rule on everything in order for him to gain control. As Mikhail plays for us, I want you to think again, real deep and hard. What are some distractions to being poor in spirit or allowing Christ to rule and reign in your life?
Thank you for listening to this week's Bible study at Hope Collective Church. Feel free to join us next Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. if you are in between ages 18 to 40, or join our Sunday morning service at 8 or 9:30. See you next time.